Hey, small towners, Mayor Matt Seal here, and I'm traveling and recording for new episodes of Small Town Podcast. While I'm doing that, we're rebroadcasting a previous episode of the podcast. We've had so many people join our digital community recently, and I want to make sure you guys don't miss out on hearing about small towns we visited before you found out about us. I'll have a new episode real soon, but until then, enjoy this previously released episode. Small Town Podcast is made possible by generous support from the Georgia Municipal Association. GMA supports Georgia cities. Small Town Podcast is supported by Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company. Consolidated Pipe is a full-line supplier of products for the water, wastewater, and natural gas industries, and they serve utilities and public works departments in cities, large and small, every day. They're the exclusive distributor of Master Meter AMI-AMR technology. As a family-owned company with a legacy that began in 1960, let Consolidated Pipe show you that they are dedicated to service.
I hereby call this episode to order.
Hey, small towners, it's Mayor Matt Seal, and this is episode 7 of Small Town Podcast. Today, we travel a bit north of the great city of Osceola to a small town near beautiful Lake Oconee. Now, this town has seen some changes in its community since our guest first took office on city council years ago, but it has continued to thrive under his leadership today. We're going to go talk to Mayor Glenn Wright in the small town of Greensboro, Georgia. Come go with me. Growing up in coastal Georgia, I only thought I lived in a small town. As soon as I graduated high school, I moved to the big city of Atlanta for college and to start my life. My life is a journey, and I ended up in Osceola, Georgia. Population 3,400. We've got 2 traffic lights here. We're not looking to get a third anytime soon. Some years later, the people of Osceola made me their mayor. Man, I love living in a small town. Other folks do too. This is the Small Town Podcast, and I'm your host, Mayor Matt Seal of the great city of Osceola, Georgia. Small Town Podcast is sponsored by Koch Industries. Just like the great small towns we feature on Small Town Podcast, every great company has a story. From its humble beginnings starting out in Middle America in the 1960s, Koch Industries has become one of the largest privately held companies in the nation and has achieved an international presence in 50 countries around the globe. The companies of Koch Industries create innovations in transportation, medical care, water filtration, building materials, household goods, and so many other products and technologies that impact our lives every day. You can see more of the Koch story, both where they've come from and where they're going, by visiting kochind.com/podcast. Small Town Podcast is supported by the Southern Mercantile. Visit southernmercantile.com for a blog about small town living and an online store with a selection of carefully curated goods. The Southern Mercantile. Simple living, Southern charm. All right, I'm now pleased to be sitting in the city council chambers in the city of Greensboro with the mayor of Greensboro, Mayor Glenn Wright. Mayor Wright, thanks for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. We're proud and very pleased to welcome you to our beautiful city of Greensboro, Georgia. So upon that, we like to make sure that you're comfortable and things are convenient for you in our beautiful city of Greensboro, Georgia.
Oh, I got a chance to look around already. You're downtown. Going to spend a little bit of time this afternoon around Greensboro, so I appreciate that welcome. Yeah, already it's been good. Well, I want to get started. I'm excited because I've had interviews with folks that I've known before along the way, but now I'm getting to the opportunity to meet people for the first time as a part of the Small Town Podcast and the episodes we're doing on some great small towns. So just to tell my audience now, I don't have a backstory as a few people, so this is exciting. So I'll start with the same question I ask everybody.
Yes.
Were you born in the town of Greensboro?
Yes, I was. 70 years ago, matter of fact. This month, we're proud to celebrate. We'll be looking at celebrating our 71st birthday.
Okay.
Here in the county of Greene and the city of Greensboro.
Well, happy early birthday.
Thank you. We hope to see many more.
That's right.
Up on that, I've seen and been here. I was born in the family of the late Willie and Luella Wright, and we had a family of 11 children. And there, I'm the oldest of the 11, which I'm proud of. I've seen all the others come up under my leadership and my direction. As Mom and Dad passed them on to me, I was able to pass them down to my sisters and brothers. So I'm proud to say that we have a lifelong legacy here in the city of Greensboro, where we attended the public school. We came up very poor, I like to say, and put emphasis on, and it was during the time of segregation, I might say, where the blacks had one place of sitting in public places, and the white was privileged to sit in other places. We had a local theater here, and we wasn't allowed, I remember it well as my childhood, we wasn't allowed to go upstairs and view the screen, but we were allowed to go downstairs. And there was so much that we weren't privileged to participate in because of our race. And I was able to adjust to that during that time. And however, I was able to experience the transition to integration. And it was an exciting opportunity in my life to see that we had the black school and we had the white school in public sitting. But we was able to work together in our workplaces, and as a youngster coming up, we had, I would witness my granddaddy farm and the mules and the cows and et cetera being of that age and that time. However, I didn't participate in it, but I watched my granddad, and he was telling me, boy, get over there out the way now. This cow will kick you, or that mule will kick you, and et cetera. So those was days of poverty I would like to look at. We had one vehicle, and my dad had an old vehicle, and we lived out in the rural area of Greensboro, or Greene County, I might say, at that time. And we had to come to the downtown Greensboro to shop, and there was mass grocery store, the McCormick's, I remember.
Mm-hmm. Where, I saw that coming through town,
Where Dad would go, and part of it was the clothes department, and the other part was where we picked up the grocery, and of course we lived out of the garden other than the product that we bought at the grocery store. Dad had a garden that we would, in summer months, that we would live and eat the collard greens and tomatoes and okras and et cetera. So those were a part of my growing up life. And to get to the school life, we was privileged in that we had some dedicated educators, I feel like, that was concerned. And our educators at that time was all Afro-American. They was black. Teachers, males and females, and principals likewise. So they had some knowledge of what it was to come up in a racial environment. So it was passed on, and I feel that we had the best of the best during that time. However, I wasn't privileged and could afford to go to college. I didn't receive any scholarships or degree, and my mom and dad weren't financially able to do. So, however, we made an attempt to pick up some courses along the way that will help broaden our views in life and help that we would be able to adjust in the cooperative world as we sought after jobs and job description.
So what year did you graduate high school?
It was 1965. Okay. During that time, and then we stayed here. There was not a lot of jobs opportunity that I sought that I thought would be valuable to me and for me. So I journeyed to Atlanta to seek. And
left home for a little while, seeking a fortune.
That's right. So it was all the big city, the bright lights. And we had some experience up there. It was a little bit more than I anticipated and expected. I didn't realize that much violence that was going on in the larger cities as it was compared to more or less country. Where
right,
everybody,
the small towns, everybody small knows town. Everybody. Now, did you go to Atlanta pretty much as soon as you graduated high school, or were you here a couple years?
As soon as I finished high school, went and joined to Atlanta. After then, it wasn't shortly that I found out that this was not the lifestyle for me, so I returned to Greene County in the city of Greensboro and back with Mom and Dad for a while, and then I ventured out on my own, got me a little apartment, got a job, and I saw fit that the construction world, the paintbrush, was interested into me. So I started out painting the houses around, and I got me a little advertising in the local paper. And I had some training because I loved to paint with the paintbrush, and I was successful in it. So in 1968, I met this young lady, Evelyn Rose, that I knew in high school and so forth. So during the transition of painting houses and going through and going about and around the local business and so forth, we had opportunity to date a few times. So we became interested in each other, and shortly after then...
A big smile's coming across your face. Now, people listening can't see it. I just want to make sure they know. That's okay. A big old smile while you're talking about this.
So we end up in marriage united, and shortly after then, we had one child, our first child with Danny, and it was a seven-year period, and we had another child, Vincent. We decided upon that. We looked at the educational status and the time of poverty and what we need to prepare for the future. So we decided no more children. We felt like this was enough for us to prepare for future and their way of being. So it was, and we went to work and we saved and we met the needs that the family needs that at that time, and we was fortunate enough. She worked in one of the local plants here where it was a hometown manufacturing for a number of years. Matter of fact, she worked there long as it was in existence. I've forgotten the time when they closed the doors and went out of business. But I continued on in my construction field, and we broadened the scope out to where we went from the paintbrush to building houses. So we built, along with some other guys that I had working for us, we built, I think it was, seemed like it was about 5-6 houses from the ground. And then after then, we got the idea of rental properties. So we went into the rental business, and that's where we are now as we speak today along the political world. But my personal life is well oriented to the construction and then going into purchasing properties and going into the rental business, in which we've been very successful at this point in time in life because we're just about to retire. We're at the threshold of trying to retire, but the business won't let me to retire. So
always something else. It's something to do. I'm about to say now, if you're the mayor of a small town, there's always something new to be done there too.
That's exactly right.
Well, let me ask that. That's a successful businessman.
Yes.
Told about your family, but obviously you got into small town politics at some point. So when did you first get interested in getting involved in your local government here in Greensboro?
Well, it was back, I believe, if memory serves me correct, it was back in the late 70s. I was in purchasing rental properties at that time. And down in the community we call Canaan, which was a poverty-stricken area, has apartment complex, that the only thing, government apartment for housing for people. So I bought some of the older structure houses, and I requested from the city at that time there was open ditch, and water, rain water, would run off, and it would run in that ditch, and it would overflow, and it would go in the yard of one of the houses that I had purchased. So I requested at the city to enclose that ditch so the storm water would be enclosed and wouldn't overrun and run in the yard there, and it was inconvenient. So at that time, it would seem to be, my request fell on deaf ear. I was placed on the back burner. However, I didn't see any result. So it prompted me, at that time, it seemed to me that whatever an Afro-American or black person would ask, we was pretty much denied or put on the back burner so that it wasn't getting any action at any decent time. So I felt like we were being discriminated against.
Well, now let me ask you this. Were there any black council members on the council at the time you're talking about?
Yes, it was one.
One.
Willie E. Chester. Okay. He was serving, and he was the only one at that particular time.
And what's the total number of council members in Greensboro? Everybody's different.
So. It's five.
Five council members and a mayor.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And so one of those five was a black man, and the rest were white. And so
right.
You felt like the disproportionate attention to the request. Okay.
Yes, exactly. That's the way I felt at that time. And I felt like I had respect for Willie at the time, and he was a former educator, but I felt like he needed some support from the community, local rather than from the education. I felt like in my mind, he was being identified as an educator, and more or less he would represent those in a higher echelon than the everyday work person. So I sought to run for a seat, and the election at that particular time was every 2 years.
Okay.
That was a city election.
So what year was it that you ran the first time?
So it was, I believe it was in 77, 78.
Okay.
I ran for an election the first, and I was defeated. I was young, and I talked to some peoples, and they saying, well, you're young, and we just felt like you were inexperienced. And,
well, how old were you at the time?
At that time, I was 32.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And now do your, because every city is different based on the charters. Does your council run just from a specific district, or are they at-large members or some of each?
Good question, man. At large. We run...
Everybody's at large.
At large, okay. Yes.
Okay.
As it had, we was confronted at one time back some years to go into district, but we felt like they said it wasn't large enough at that particular time to go in district, so we stayed at large.
And okay.
So we're still at large right now. To go back a minute with Mr. Chester mm-hmm. being the only black that's serving in city government, I felt like that was a need. So I lost the first election. The next time that I ran, I lost twice, 2 years. So the fourth year, and it was about the fifth year, there was a white person. I've forgotten his name exactly now, but he worked at the local lumber yard company. He was a supervisor out there. And so he moved, and that freed up a seat. So it was a special election held at that particular time. Ronald Daughtry, I believe that may have been his name. But he moved out of city, out of Greene County, and that seat came vacant. So I applied then. I ran in a special election. That's when I was awarded the seat. And I believe that was in 80... It was 82 or 83. I believe it was 83.
So that was your third time you'd run?
That was the third time
okay.
That I ran, and I was successful.
Third time was a charm, huh?
That was a charm. So I won that seat, and we served there in the council seat for, I believe, about 18 years from that seat.
Okay.
There before we
and every 2 years having to get reelected.
Had to get reelected.
Or was it a 4-year term? It was just staggered.
No, it was every 2 years.
Every 2 years, everybody changed.
Everybody ran again.
Now, is it still that way? Because I know some folks
no,
have gone
it's changed. Legislation yeah. changed back.
So now
it's a 4-year term. Mm-hmm.
They just stagger them so every 2 years.
Yes, yes. I believe it was in the year of 98 to 2000. Legislation changed then to put a 4-year term mm-hmm. on all the municipalities throughout the state of Georgia. And that's all a 4-year term now, even though some cities stagger that term, or some counties is staggered. But Ivan is still at large. Every 4 years, all seats become vacant for re-election, or those that are interested in entering the race. So that's pretty much the way it done as the council, as getting a seat around the table with the council.
But I know there's more to the story because you're now the mayor.
I'm now the mayor.
So you were on the council for, you said, 18 years.
Yes, I believe it's approximately 18 okay. years I served on the council. If you go back and I look at, I believe it was in the year of 2000, election came up in 2001, I ran for the office of mayor.
Mm-hmm.
And we were successful, victorious, I might use the word, as achieving that position. And I was very proud of, because it was the first, I am the first Afro-American mayor to be elected.
Yeah.
We had the former Willie Chester, I'd like to bag up to say, he served an unexpired term of Mayor Smith, I believe his name was, back prior to me running for mayor mm-hmm. position.
So he was mayor pro tem.
He was mayor pro tem. That's exactly mm-hmm. right. He served the unexpired term, I believe, which was about a year. But I was elected by the citizen of the city of Greensboro to serve as the mayor in 01, and I took office in 02.
And been the mayor ever since.
And been the mayor ever since.
No signs of slowing down by what I see.
No, it hadn't.
You said the word retirement earlier in this conversation, but I'll be a little skeptical.
Yes, I've tried to retire, but I couldn't find any opposition to anyone to oppose or
you
wanted the job.
Somebody to step up and do the job.
Right.
That's
so
right.
I looked around and evaluated and went back one day and I told my wife, I said, look. Am I the only one that has a screw loose and nobody else want this prestigious job but
yeah,
me?
Yeah.
And then we went back to looking at the leadership role that we were playing, and we said that, well, we feel that we are doing a good job, so
might as well keep doing it.
No one wants to change at this point. So they allow me to continue to do what we've been doing in the past. So we still seeking after a better city and more prosperous
That's
city
right.
to live in with the effort and the assistance of other elected officials
That's
in
right.
my council. Yes.
Let me ask this. Now, let me back up to when
you've
already expressed that your concern was you felt like the black citizens in the community weren't as equally represented, or maybe their concerns weren't given the same kind of efforts. They got put on the back burner, and that was what led you to want to run initially.
Yes.
In addition to that, were there some specific initiatives you want to take? A lot of times people will run because they want to make this one change or start this new program or you know, take care of this one or two things and kind of have some priorities. So were there some things other than the general representation of citizens in your community that you wanted to affect change on when you first got elected?
When I first got elected, I didn't have a long, drawn-out plan that I could see and identify a lot of needs that I felt like that it was some distinction made between the black and the white here in the city of Greensboro. However, during the course, after once being elected, then I was able to observe a few other things seem like that more attention was placed in some particular areas mm-hmm. of the city of Greensboro versus some other areas of poverty that was totally pretty much occupied by blacks.
Mm-hmm.
And at that junction in time, I started to make notations of and then make the comparison of what was done or what more the attention was placed in the streets more or less was occupied by the residents of white versus the streets that was in the other areas of the city of Greensboro, which was the residential there was Afro-American or black. Mm-hmm. So it was identified and was some different, even though it wasn't accepted when I echoed the voice around the table in our monthly meeting. However, I feel like the council at that time, white and black, which was myself and Willie Chester, more attention and more grants was sought after to bring the black community part or the undeveloped, I might would use, part of Greensboro to be placed in portion of the agenda. To look after, to seek ways and revenues that we can improve, such as what prompted me to first run was open a ditch where the rainwater ran off, you know, the ditches. And they were open pretty much all over in the black community, yet the downtown and the immediate downtown district, which was more or less residential and occupied by white, well, the storm water drains were enclosed.
Mm-hmm.
So we sought grants, and I never forget the very first grant was awarded to the city of Greensboro, and it included the area where I still presently live at this time, in the Canaan area, we call, and it's been identified as Martin Luther King Jr. Drive. The rainwater storm sewage has been enclosed through seeking out the many grants, and we've been successful. So now that part of the city, and you journey up and down the streets, it's enclosed. You don't ride by and look at open ditches, so to speak, where the rainwater, storm water run off, and it's visible.
As I do this more and more, I find it increasingly interesting to find out that one little thing that got someone that may not have thought about getting into politics interested in running.
Right.
And an open ditch.
Yes, an open ditch.
Being the example here. And on some other episodes, the conversations, it's interesting what gets it. Now, let me ask this. You were on the council for 18 years,
And it sounds like very early on identified some things, and I'm sure it took some time, but it sounds like progress is made on those areas you thought that needed some more attention. What is it that in 2001 made you want to run for mayor and take the big chair?
Good question. But it was that the previous mayor, Mayor Boswell, he decided to retire at that time. And I served as mayor pro tem. I served under him for 6 years, I believe. It was 3 terms. And he told me, he said, Glenn, I'm going to retire. I'm going home. And I think that I'd like to see you serve as mayor. I'll support you if you desire to run. And I said, well, I'm not interested really in that. And he said, well, you've been doing the mayor job, assisting me for the last 6 years, and I could count on you. You have the city at heart. I said, I've always had the city at heart, Mayor. We had a conversation. We had lunch a couple of times, and he said, I hope you will consider running as mayor. So I went back and told my wife, and we prayed about it. And I came down the street one day, and I looked at some accomplishment down MLK Jr. Drive, and I was very proud to see the improvement over the years. And I received a vision from the Lord that we could take this city to another level totally for the business and the expansion of the boundaries of the city limit, and we could extend it over and beyond I-20 and et cetera and et cetera. So all of this was in a vision that I received from the Lord. So that vision that I got from the Lord, that was really, really what prompted me to seek after a more stressful job that I've already was encountering, being the man, the phone calls all time of night and the complaints about the water bills and et cetera. So I wanted to be a part of to make this become a reality. That is really what prompted me to make things possible for the future of Greensboro.
And you mentioned and how you've stayed so long, it's because you failed to find any opposition, somebody who wanted the job. But let's go back to the beginning. When you were, even as a councilman, and now, of course, as the mayor, have you ever had opposition? I guess you're at large seats. There's multiple seats. So people that maybe run at the same time can also get a seat the way that works. That may not be considered opposition, although if 5 people are running for 3 seats, you got to be the top three. But have you encountered opposition along the way? How did that go?
As the mayor, no. At this point, it has been rumored that some interested citizen was interested in running for the position of the seat as mayor. But since I received the title and was sworn in 2002, I haven't had any opposition.
You're looking for some now. You say you're trying to get out of the job.
And I've been looking for some, and I was expecting some just the last year before we started. This is the 5th term. We started back here in January of 18. But at this junction, still hadn't received any opposition for the seat to title as mayor.
Well, you might need to go start recruiting. You got 3 more years.
I got 3 more years.
Now, let me ask this to go back, because this has been an important part of this story. When you first were interested in running for council, when it was that open ditch.
yes, okay.
There was 1 black member of the council.
Yes.
And 4 white councilmen and a white mayor.
Yes.
Tell us what the composition of, obviously, a black mayor since 2002 when you were sworn in, of those 5 councilmen, what's the breakdown on race now?
The race has totally changed. We, during the transition, at one point, since I've been mayor, since 2002, we had at one point, we had 2 whites and 3 blacks to serve as the councilman makeup in the city of Greensboro. Then we had, as time went on, we had 1 white and 4 blacks to change. The ratio changed. And then after time went on, election went on, we had no white and 5 black council, along with the black mayor during my tenure since I've been office. So the ratio has changed from 2 white, 3 blacks, to and then 1 white, 4 blacks, to now it's 5 blacks serving as the makeup race of the city council.
And I hope my conversation, I'm asking these questions, I don't mean to be divisive on racial lines.
Yes.
But as a small town mayor, I know that there's still in rural parts of Georgia and throughout America, that still matters. There's still a tension. There's still the relationships there among the community. So just speak just for a moment of what that means to you being, like I said, you started out wanting to run because you felt like the interest of the black citizens wasn't getting the same level of attention. And that made you run not once, not twice, three times to go ahead and do that. It wasn't something where you ran once and said, oh, I guess they don't want me, and you went back to being a successful businessman and building up things. You it was that important to you to now where the entire makeup of the mayor and council is all black. So just comment on the significance of that, and also how has that changed the community culturally, maybe? And I'm sure that's created some tensions along the way, but also just made sure things are taken care of in areas where they weren't before. So just speak to that.
Mayor, that's a good question. I'm glad you posed it to bag up and look at it from the very beginning. And what prompted me to run, it was, and I felt personally, as it was some racial discrimination that was exhibited here in the city of Greensboro, not from the standpoint of street riots and rejection of that point from the black. I've never experienced that publicly, but in so many ways of neglect and not having given fair opportunity or extending opportunity in the Afro-American race as it was and came down through the white. So I feel that that got some attention by echoing our voice and concern down through the years as a council person. It did make a difference doing decision making and the improvement that we could work together and all enjoy the beautification and the growth here in the city of Greensboro. So we had some team players even early coming aboard as a council member, and we was able to work together to make something possible that the playing field I use would be even. And during the transition of all of this, we've always tried to implement love for one another, and that we are a people of God and not looking at the people of color or race. So I think highly in because of that type of attitude that we have displayed down through the years, both with the previous two council members that has served on and city government, they are still around and they are still in a servant position. They too was able to realize that we are one people here and considered and looked upon as one people rather than of an opposite people in race and color and ability or ethics or what would go along with the job description of. I credit that to the attitudes of the ones that sits around the table and make decisions and for the citizen and carry out the wishes of the same. So I've said all of that to say, I think that strongly now with the makeup of all Afro-American governing body here in the city of Greensboro, the white come and they are received and they are looked upon as citizen as well as a part of the makeup of the citizen of the city of Greensboro. And it is pleasing that they are, or we all, I might say, that we all can enjoy the improvement, the expansion, the growth, the development, the safety, and all. It's not designed wherein it's making a distinction whether what side of town you live on or what street you live on or how much your house costs and the poverty level and all, but it's all designed to work together for a better city. And the makeup of the council, it had not been shown or has not been identified that there is any different. The concern for the entire city is all fair and above board for everyone. And I'm proud to serve as mayor and looking at the racial makeup it is. We got about the last, I believe the 2000 census was, I believe it was about 3,200 citizens, okay. Between 3,200 and 3,500 citizens in the city of Greensboro. That was the makeup at that particular time. And the percentage-wise, I'm not sure at that date, and so whether it's about 70-30 70 Afro-American, 30% white. Mm-hmm. It's a more minority Afro-Americans within the city limits of the mm-hmm. city of Greensboro than it is white. But we've had a good work relationship regardless. And there's, in my opinion, I haven't been able to identify any racial distinction between black and white at this juncture.
Well, that's the way I think it should be.
Yes.
But I know agree. That's not something you can just gloss over and say, oh, that doesn't exist. So,
yes.
Let me switch it up a little bit, and this will be on a little bit of a lighter side. I've got some get-to-know-you questions. We've talked a lot about your life, your motivation, your service on the council as mayor. But I want to ask you a few questions to help people to get to know you, but then also this might, for people that already know you, might teach them something new. So do you have, or have you ever had, a nickname?
No.
No?
No, I haven't.
Now they just say Mr. Mayor, right?
Now they say, they identify me with Glenn during my childhood before, and I remember, I think I was maybe 6 or 7 years old, 8 years old, they called me Snag. That was in a family setting because I had lost my two front teeth.
Uh-oh.
And they called me Snag. So you just snag them out, snag. And that went on for a few years. But other than that, I can't remember anything, any nickname at all after the age of 10.
Okay. So no family kept Snag going
into your family adult life. Snag going. No, they didn't after my two front teeth came back.
All right, next question. If you had to sing, maybe to defend the honor of your fair city of Greensboro, if you had to sing a karaoke song, what would your go-to karaoke song be? If you had to sing karaoke,
I suppose it would be "The More We Get Together, the Better Off, the Better We Are."
All right,
to love and to shine, to look out for one another, the better we are. For the beauty of the city of Greensboro, the better we are. Enjoy, come together, enjoy the beauty of Greensboro. Family oriented, family together. We are all together, one for one and one for all. Together we stand, divided we fall.
Well, the honor of Greensboro is intact. That's great. I haven't had anyone actually start. That's good. All right, next question. What is your favorite meal or favorite dish?
Fried chicken is one of my favorite meals, and one of my favorite dish is sweet potato pie.
Okay. So those two together or separate?
Those two together along with some string beans, and we have a favorite meal, however we have been able to identify, that's my favorite.
Okay.
But my most healthy meal that we strive on now as we journey along and look and want to continue to serve a beautiful city and as a healthy mayor, it's all with baked chicken, string bean, and carrots.
All right, you're saying the fried chicken's not as healthy as the baked chicken?
That fried chicken is not as healthy as the baked chicken.
It just tastes better.
It tastes better. That's my favorite. But we try to look upon more or less the healthy versus the desire to satisfy the flesh.
See, since you haven't got any opposition, you better stay around for a while.
So I want to switch the baked chicken.
All right, final get-to-know-you question. If you could attend any concert of any singer or group, whether they are dead or alive, whose concert would you want to go see?
I would want to go to see B.B. King.
B.B. King.
The late B.B. King, the blues B.B. King, the famous guitar player B.B. King. He was my favorite, and it still would be the same if he was alive today.
When I first drove into Greensboro, I could see right away that they had a thriving downtown. And it was obvious to me that it was because the city and the business community had been paying attention to the details for quite some time. I had the opportunity to speak to a local business owner about what downtown Greensboro has done to keep things so vibrant, and it turned out that this individual has played a key role in that for many years.
All right, I'm pleased to be joined now by Cynthia Smith, a local business owner. She has a downtown shop we're going to talk about. She's also a member of the Greensboro Business Association. So, Cynthia Smith, thanks for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Wow, we're so glad to have you here. Thank you.
Well, it's good to be here. I got a chance to actually go through your store. We'll talk about that very specifically in just a minute. But I want to ask you in general, just talk about what it's like. And I've got some retail experience, although my wife's the one that really runs it in Osceola. Talk about what it's like to run a retail business or business in general in a small town. And there's some ups, there's some downs, there's some pros and cons there. Just speak to that for a little bit for some folks that may not know.
You know, I jumped into retail not really understanding all of what it entailed, which is probably one of the better ways to do it.
If you knew what you were getting into, you might have second thoughts. Yeah,
it's a full-time job, but it's the best job you'll ever have. We find that being a business owner in Greensboro is especially neat, and I hear this from people who come through town. They say, wow, you have so much support here. And we do. We have our governmental bodies that just are right out there putting out flowers and keeping the streets clean and keeping the sidewalks clean and fixing everything in sight so it looks nice. And then the business owners are busy making it look pretty on top of that. So you can't ask for a better environment to have a business. The government also has things like facade grants and things like that to help us businesses who are always strapped for money to be able to improve the look of our store. And that's unusual in small towns to have this much support from your government. And then the people are so wonderful that come through here. We have locals, we have new people who come through who have just moved here. We have the people who live here all the time. And we have all these wonderful people that drive by and just stop to check us out. So it's a really good place to have a business. It's always hard. There's no way to predict your business because one day you'll have tons. The next day you think somebody evacuated Greensboro or something. But most
Rolled
of the time
the
it's steady.
Yeah.
So it's really neat. And, you know, we sort of support each other a whole bunch here.
Well, I don't know if you used the word team, but it sounds like there's a good
team exactly.
in Greensboro and a good sense of community. Mm-hmm. And there are some places where it's very cutthroat and businesses feel like they're competing against each other, but it seems like in a small town, and Greensboro seems to be a great example of this, and what you just said backed it up, where everyone supports each other and each of your downtown businesses wants all the other ones to survive because you're all in this together.
Mm-hmm.
And that sense of community, it's in the fabric of that society, and that's a good thing to see. And I know just from my short time walking through downtown, I got a sense of that too. So it is something very real. So she's not just saying that, y'all. I can vouch for
customers remark about it, about how much these businesses support each other and how they're all sending each other to the other ones.
Well, when one store owner says, hey, bye, have a great day, and by the way, please go down, you know, to the next block, or here's this great thing if you're looking at this, they have some also, you know, that kind of thing. That's a little uncommon. You don't always see someone saying, oh, I'm sorry you didn't buy something from me, or you've now purchased from me, now please go purchase from, you know, because people think of that as competition. So small towns and that sense of community and togetherness is just something unique and different. What makes small towns great, I think. Now, before we get into your store, I want to back up a little bit because you have what I think is a kind of unique story about how you got into being a business owner in downtown. They're now called Main Street programs, but you started what was called a Better Hometown program. So how did you get into that? What was your role maybe just before that? What kind of experience you had? And talk about getting that started in downtown Greensboro.
I was lucky enough to be hired as a part-time manager for the Better Hometown program when it was first started in the state of Georgia. There were 5 pilot projects. And we were all told that we were to take small incremental steps to improve the community, and they had very definite ways that you were supposed to do that. So I learned a lot when I was doing that job. But again, you'll notice the word part-time comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Part-time for me, with my children having grown up, it was a good place to be.
Mm-hmm.
The job has now grown and grown and grown, so there's 3 people in the office of Main Street.
Now, when was that that you started that? What year was that?
We started in 1997.
Okay.
And
that was when you were one of 5 in the whole state of Georgia. Mm-hmm. Of the Better Hometown programs, which I think you told me before was specific to smaller towns. Is that right?
Exactly. Yeah. You had to be 5,000 or 5, less.
5,000 population
exactly.
less.
Exactly. Okay. So we were very lucky to get picked. And a good timing for Greensboro because we were starting a streetscape and we wanted to move forward on that. The city hired me to work on the streetscape, and once they found out more about Better Hometown program, they switched me straight over to that because they realized that was a lot bigger project than they thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to be part of the streetscape but didn't have to manage it, which is fine.
Now, for people that may not speak our language, explain what a streetscape project is.
Oh, a streetscape means that you go in and we took our sidewalks back to the 30s and put in lighting, landscaping, handicap access, benches, all the neat things that make people want to stay when they come into Greensboro. The more ambiance that you have, the more likely they are to stay around, check out all of the business and stuff. So it was a really big move by the city to go for that money. Mm-hmm. They went for grant money, and they put their own money with it. And then had that happen, well, that just kicked off everything else. And you were talking about teamwork. The minute the city did all of that, then the business owners started putting flowers out in front of their shops,
right,
and sprucing up, putting the awnings out. I mean, you didn't even have to talk them into it. They just were going
to
do
they
it
wanted
because
to add
they wanted
to, yeah,
they could see what the difference it had
kind
made.
Of build some momentum towards that. Mm-hmm. So talk about some of the things that beyond that streetscape project and getting going with better hometowns, what were some of the things that Greensboro did in the years that followed that to kind of improve?
We had a little shove right after I got to be the better hometown manager. We had a tornado wind shear hit,
yeah,
Greensboro in January of 1998. Everybody thought I had brought it to get things changing and moving, but I really didn't. The neat thing that happened with that in that horrible devastation when roofs were picked up and knocked down and parapets were thrown out of the street, the parapet is a big brick wall of a building. We had a lot of horrible things happen, but the good thing that happened was that a business like Webb Brothers Supply got up immediately when they found out what had happened, and they headed up with plywood and started closing in the windows. This is before most of the building owners even knew anything had happened. They were already volunteering to do something like that, and they were cleaning, getting it up like that. Different people, there was a huge parapet that went down, and bricks went all over the street and out into the driving area. Volunteers came, and we had a brick cleaning party where everybody sat out on the street and not only picked up the bricks, but they cleaned them and then stacked them for that business owner. So when he finally was ready to fix it, then he could use the old brick again. So people just started pulling together,
yeah,
like that. But the biggest help was that the state, under the Better Hometown Program, sit down 22 people, all of them professionals, who could guide each business. And they did. They walked literally into each business and saw what the devastation was there, talked to them, calmed them down, and showed them where they could go, who to call, how to get help, let them know their place wasn't gone forever.
Right.
And that started the positive forward movement that was really made it easy as Better Hometown Manager to be able to work with it because they weren't scared anymore. They knew where to go.
Well, very cool. Well, now let's talk about your store because it kind of, there's some overlap here between the store that you now own and run and your time as the Main Street program now, but Better Hometowns then. So
there
let's
is,
talk about how that got going.
One of the buildings downtown had the back roof come over on the top roof. And so it totally was raining in it. The owner had no insurance, so he left it. He vacated the premises. It rained in it for 6 months, and then the city said, we can't have this happen.
Yeah.
It was the centerpiece of the town,
yeah,
and people were screaming, tear it down for a parking lot, and all of us that love history were saying, no. So anyway, they bought the building to keep it from having that happen, and about that time, the state came up with a grant for slum and blight. Came up with a grant for that. We applied for that grant to turn it into a restaurant and another retail office and loft apartments upstairs. During that time, the marketing team that was working with Better Hometown said, well, if we can get this going, then we need a business to sort of shine, that we can get somebody to start off, but we need to start the business. And that business was called Genuine Georgia. They developed the business totally. They got the Downtown Development Authority on board along with the city, and funds were made available through loans and things like that to start the business up, something that it was unheard of on the state level. And that business started 2.5 years into that. The Bickers and Goodwin building, which they were restoring, sold to Terry Bragg, who is the owner of Yesterday Cafe. And at that same time, they had put Genuine Georgia up for sale so an owner, somebody would get it. I put my name in the pot, and I got the store, which scared me half to death, but still.
Did you put your name in? Didn't think you'd get it?
You're exactly right.
So that's how, that's how you moved into the private sector.
That's how I got to the private sector. It was totally by accident.
Now, do I understand? Because now when you started the store, when the city, with the Downtown Development and the Main Street program started it, when that building that it was in then got rented out by another business,
Then we had to move.
So you were actually occupying what would otherwise have been an empty storefront. How many different locations were there up until now, up until the time
where
you
had it? The fun thing about that, and something for people to know when government owns a building, is that you do get to move a lot. So we've got known as the traveling
That's right.
Business. There were three different spots just in a period of 2 years that we had to move the store again and again and again.
But it was always because a new business was coming
to
town.
Exactly. Always for a good thing.
Yeah.
But traumatic for those who were running, the people that were running Genuine Georgia for the Downtown Development Authority. But I bought it when it was on the corner of North Main and Broad Street. And then we were able to grow enough to move across the street to a bigger building at one time where we're located now.
So it's actually had four locations. Mm-hmm. You moved it to its fourth and maybe final.
And we're not
we'll
moving.
Okay, it is final. Okay. Well, tell us about your store, Genuine Georgia.
Well, Genuine Georgia was developed to be an all Georgia-made products. I mean, everything is made by Georgia artists. All the food is made by Georgia companies that have been in business for 100 years or more. All of the books are Georgia authors. The music that we play, they're Georgia musicians. So everything, we go along that theme with the business. The cards that we give out when someone buys a piece of art is all about the artist. The concept was to make sure people knew about the artist and sort of got addicted to them, if that's a word to say. But they got so they just loved the artist because they knew something about them. They knew why they were making their art. They knew why they were in business. And they knew why they treasured what it was that you just bought. And it has become especially good. We've noticed and all these concepts were already set up before I bought the business. When people come in the store, we tell them all kinds of stories about the artist, the art, and everything, and what the store was over the years. And what we find is that people, especially who have a lot of company during the years, they come in and they walk in the door and they do it themselves. We don't even have to tell them anymore. They start telling the stories and taking their friends around and showing them everything. So it teaches you a little bit about how important history is to everybody, whether they're newcomers or whether they're oldcomers or whether, you know, they've been here forever and ever and ever or not. But it's just a really neat thing to become part of a community. And once you know the stories, then you actually feel part of the community and want to come back again and again and again.
Well, I know you want to be a good team player, and you want to tell me about some of the other stores that people can shop at in downtown Greensboro. So I'll give you a chance.
Well, again, back to the team, most of the people here, the business owners, are team players, and they each are doing something special.
Yeah.
And I sort of grabbed three that I was going to think about, and one was Mark Blanton, who runs Greensboro Jewelers, which is the best jewelry store around. But he is always volunteering. He works with the Downtown Development Authority, but he's busy on his own. He puts his money where his mouth is, and he has bought buildings and restored them.
Yeah.
And because he restored them, we have four new businesses in town that he helped put there in restored buildings that are interesting to see and fascinating to look at what he did and what he found when he did his restorations. And then there's Joel McRae, who has the Greensboro Florist. So if you ever need flowers, it's a perfect place to go. But Joel is the county historian, and just to hear him talk makes you want to sit down and linger for a while there. But he is with the Historic Preservation Commission. So instead of just talking the stories, he's busy making sure that these beautiful buildings and the houses around are still going to be here in the future for future generations. And that's a lot of hard work, just really, really hard work to get all that done. Steve McCommons. Their family owns the biggest building in Greensboro, which was the largest from Atlanta to Augusta. And so it's three generations, heading on four now, of generations of McCommons is who owned that huge building. But inside that building, he has an antique store that's two stories high. He's got a clothing store that is called Murphy's that has a little of everything. He's got a barbershop, an accountant. He's got Main Street Furniture, which has two stories again. I mean, you just can't get that in every town where he tries to keep some of everything else. And then on top of that, they bought an old house that was probably would have been torn down, and moved part of their funeral business into that. Mm-hmm. So they have two places for funerals now, and that whole area just is busy an awful lot of the time. But the buildings there are restored and beautiful. So you have people who just take that interest to do things like that along the way.
Thanks, Cynthia.
You're welcome.
Well, let's switch now, and we've talked a lot about you, and obviously, just like I told you when we started this, we're not going to get too far in your story without talking about Greensboro, because you've served here so long. Just tell everyone, what is it you think that maybe sets Greensboro apart as a town, and what makes it such a great place to be?
I think it, because a little middle Georgia town is a little between two major cities doing I-20 corridor from Augusta to Atlanta, from Atlanta to Augusta. We about the midpoint. Mm-hmm. And the development of the late Lake Oconee development here that backed up and was able to attract through Georgia Power and was able to attract some of the wealthy citizen throughout the United States and all over, came from far and near and from different many states. I was able to meet them from just all over. Mm-hmm. Well, that was a part to attract and to for Greensboro, the city of Greensboro, a little small city north of the development of the Lake Oconee, which housed more or less the wealthy. We was able to be courteous enough and smiling enough and attractive enough and curious enough to invite others from the other community to come over and visit with us in our small city and to share the hospitality of what we had to offer. I think that that hospitality was able to capture the attention of those far off, and they were able to share the opportunity that they had to participate in the small middle Georgia town, city, I might well say, that no one knew existed, but it is existing, and it have a little friendly mayor with the friendly hospitality, all the citizens, and some delicious soul country food to offer. And they hadn't had the experience of this in the little small rural cities of Georgia. So I think that that was one of the things that kept us alive in the fame that we presently go out, a combination of Lake Oconee being the attractive body of water to go, the fame to go out throughout all over the United States, I might would say.
Nice to have a nice lake right nearby. Draws people in for recreation.
Yes, it does.
Let me ask you a few questions, small town questions here. Now, in a lot of places, and especially in a small town, there may be someone with kind of outsized influence, not an elected official, but just someone out in town. So is there such a person in Greensboro that if you want to do a new initiative or try some new program or go for something, you kind of need to get that person's buy-in because that person will help you get everybody on board. So is there somebody like that in Greensboro?
Well, yes, we have a few people that I feel like that we can kind of reach out to. They have some investments in Greensboro. Mm-hmm. However, they weren't local residents of Greensboro, but they had some concerns. Mm-hmm. One and foremost, and she stands out and she's been here forever, that's Cynthia Smith, because she has a business here now, and her residence is not directly in within the city confined, but she's still a Green Countyan local, and as we stated. But she has been foremost and outspoken and outreaching and has gone way out to shed some light on some ideas of what we might do and how we might go about it. There's many others. I hate to get in the name calling.
No, that's
but,
fine.
But there's many others that we do have. George LeVon Overtree, she's another one. Jim Baker is a local developer, and he has interest here. He's not, his residence is not within the city of Greensboro. But there's many, many others that made suggestion, has made suggestion.
So people that don't get to vote for you, but they have a vested interest in what you do.
Yes, that's exactly right. And that's exactly right. Yeah. The late Representative Mickey Cheney has some vested interest here. And they're concerned. And they're, just like I say, so many, many, many others that we can rely upon.
So if a person came to Greensboro and they only had time to go to one place, or maybe they came for one particular event, whether it's a monument, a site of historical significance, what would you want to make sure that a visitor to the city of Greensboro went to go see or participate in?
Well, You said one. I got a couple of sites on that.
Everybody tries to stretch it into seven.
Yes. But I would say that the most site that we would like to take them to see would be the Festival Hall. It is where it was an old building structure, and it's been renovated now and become a modern place to go and host an event and share in the renovation of it, along with the Mayor Leela Loft Apartments, to see some of the old, the before and the after, to look at the occupants of it. I think those would be one of the two priorities at the top of the list that I would like for them to see. To add one more to it, and out of the three, we got three there, the Yesterday Cafe.
Okay.
Food have a way of getting the average person's attention.
Doesn't it, though?
That's it. You go through the mouth and get to the stomach, and then you'll get, it will send a sickness to the mind. This is a beautiful place because it will taste it to my mouth and feel into my stomach, and it has got my attention. I want to come back. So the Yesterday Cafe, it was back in the early, the late 99 and early 2000. It was, we had a wind shear to come through, and it destroyed some buildings downtown. So where the Yesterday Cafe is located presently now, that building was, well, it was hit, and it was pretty much totally destroyed from what it was, a local business, general store, I might would say. And now it became a food establishment, restaurant style, and it serves basically soul food in a combination, a mixture of other, but they're popular known as the buttermilk pie place. And it has a fame and a way to reach out to it. But the renovation there, it was once at the point of being toned down, but the city of Greensboro stepped in and purchased that building. And we went through several cycles and was able to get an interested party, and Terry Brad was that one, to come, and we was able to work with her and establish and then renovating and saving that historical site and part of the original downtown and make it become a successful business as we speak today. So that is one of their goals, from brought back from dead to alive and being made a successful, you know, once was destroyed but now made alive and revived.
Always
so
a good
to speak.
Story.
Yes.
Well, as we start to close it up, I just want to give you an opportunity to speak directly to the audience, a small town podcast, and you sell them on why they should come visit or maybe even come live in the city of Greensboro.
I would like to extend you, as Mayor of the City of Greensboro, extend you an invitation. This is the most choice place out of all the states in the United States and the state of Georgia, this local little municipality, the city of Greensboro, where you will be treated as one of many other citizens, where you will be recognized as who you are on first name basis. Most cities that has a grown out of name base and you be identified as a number, we still is a little friendly city that know one another by first name basis, and we have a safety project here going through our police department wherein you can walk the street after hours, feel safe and secure, and don't have to be worried about being mugged, robbed, or killed. This is what I have to offer to you, where you can be assured that your life will be highly considered and highly evaluated, that you're important to yourself and not only yourself, but to all others in the city of Greensboro. Safe place to live, prosperous place to make your investment, and a great place to be healthy and live a long, prosperous life. City of Greensboro, Greensboro, Georgia.
I couldn't have said that better if you'd have given me the script. Mayor Glenn Wright, thank you so much for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
We certainly appreciate you, Mayor, for taking your business out of your busy schedule to come by to visit and take this opportunity that we might share some of the stories that we have, so many that we would like to share with so many others. So do come again. There's still other stories to be told in the city of Greensboro.
Yes, sir. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, small towners, that'll do it for this previously released episode of Small Town Podcast. As always, we thank our season sponsors, the Georgia Municipal Association, Consolidated Pipe, the Southern Mercantile, and Koch Industries for supporting us as we explore and share great small towns. I'll talk to you soon, and y'all are welcome to come to Osceola anytime.
Small Town Podcast is an Irwinomics production that tells the stories of America's great small towns. We release new episodes every other week, featuring small towns through stories of the people who live and lead there, and sometimes exploring issues that affect small towns everywhere. Our podcast episodes are made possible with editing assistance from Resonant Recordings, who also mixes and masters all of our episodes. You can subscribe to Small Town Podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast, and the next episode will download while you sleep. You can also leave us a rating and review, which would help us reach new listeners. We would really appreciate it. Beyond our episodes, you can hang out with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also learn more about us and the towns we visit by stopping by our website, www.smalltownpodcast.com. We love to show you all the small towners out there, some great images from the small towns we visit, and let you know about the festivals and events you can participate in and the places you hear about on our podcast. Thanks for listening, and we hope to see you real soon.
We stand adjourned.